This is Growing Pulse Crops, and I'm your host, Tim Hamrich. Today we're talking about DNA testing for herbicide resistance and soil pathogens with Zach Bateson of the National Ag Genotyping Center.
Growers can send us kochia. We can genotype them for the resistance to group 14, and then they're able to have a discussion with either their agronomists or other consultants to see whether it can be another actionable spraying opportunity or there's something else that they can do about these resistant weeds.
Zach Bateson is a research manager at the National Agricultural Genotyping Center based in Fargo, North Dakota. You heard a little bit about the work the National Ag Genotyping Center is doing in our last episode with Dr. Brian Jenks. Today we take a deeper dive into the services they offer to provide DNA testing for farmers and agronomists. Zach got his start in DNA-based testing, working in wildlife biology with prairie chickens and lizards, but he says all of the skills can be applied to any organism, including crop variety detection, herbicide resistance, and soil pathogens, all of which are areas he focuses today. We'll kick things off with a bit more information about the National Agricultural Genotyping Center before we dive deeper into the important tests that they are providing for farmers.
The National Agricultural Genotyping Center is a private nonprofit diagnostic lab. And so we specialize in high throughput genetic testing. And so we have tests for mostly pathogen or pest detection or trait detection in weeds, as well as crop improvement type tests. So we're able to genetically confirm varieties of field pea. And that's one of our other big tests in pulse crops.
And yeah, can you talk more about that? The variety, what did you call it, variety detection? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So we have been working closely with the North Dakota State Seed Department. They perform all of the certification of field pea seed lots every year. And so they require a genetic test to confirm that seed lots that come into their lab are the correct variety. And so we've been working with them. They send us a subsample of seed and we genetically test to confirm that the variety matches what it should be based off of the paperwork and what the growers were growing in the field. And so that really helps maintain a lot of these field pea varieties within the market. A lot of varieties, you know, they take a decade at least to develop. And there are certain traits that are beneficial to the grower and to the consumer. And we want to make sure we maintain those varieties within the market. So after they're released into the market, certification helps make sure that these varieties stay pure.
Let's get back to kind of the tools and stay on the concept of weeds here, because I know every pulse crop grower listening has challenges when it comes to weeds. What does that look like in practice for you trying to apply these tools to weed science?
Yeah, so at the National Ag Genotyping Center, we don't have greenhouse research. We're strictly a genetic lab. And so we work pretty closely with weed scientists in North Dakota, extension weed scientists at NDSU that do have the greenhouse research. So they're doing herbicide trials and they're finding particular plants that, for example, kochia plants or pigweeds that are resisting their herbicide trials. And so what we're able to do as a genetic lab is look at the DNA and find these markers or these mutations that occur within the genome of these plants that allow them to resist that herbicide. And so we're able to take that information, these markers, and use them to help growers. If they find a patch of pigweeds or kochia that they sprayed with a particular herbicide and it just didn't work, they're able to send us a leaf sample and we can test for these same genetic markers.
And then what are we able to do with that information? What's that look like from kind of an actionable standpoint for either the weed scientist or the farmer or both?
Yeah. So the great benefit of genetic testing is that it can be relatively quick. So this spring, what we're hoping to do with kochia, because there's this new resistance for group 14 herbicide, what we're hoping to do is growers can send us kochia. We can genotype them for the resistance to group 14, and then they're able to have a discussion with either their agronomists or other consultants to see whether it can be another actionable spraying opportunity or there's something else that they can do about these resistant weeds. So we essentially provide the data saying, hey, this population of kochia has a mutation linked to herbicide resistance, and they can bring that information to their agronomists to figure out the best pest management plan.
And is it the case that we're discovering new mutations all the time, or do we have it, you know, dialed in what mutation is going to cause resistance?
So when it comes to herbicide resistant in weeds, there's two categories. There's target site mechanism and non-target site mechanism. The non-target site mechanisms are those that we just don't either fully understand, or there isn't a DNA-based marker we can look at. We focus on the target site mechanisms. These are the mutations that we can see in the genome. We can use a genetic test to identify it within populations of weeds. So these species of weeds, whether it's kochia or if it's the pigweeds, they're constantly evolving new ways to resist herbicides. And so it's a moving target.
And you mentioned kochia and pigweed. Are there other weed species that you're working with on a regular basis to look for resistance?
It's really just the group of pigweeds. So water hemp, Palmer amaranth, red root pigweed, and Powell amaranth. So the group of pigweeds and then kochia. Those are the main weeds that we are now focusing on. But I know that there's other weed species that are important in North Dakota. And so we're having these conversations with crop consultants, with NDSU Extension, to see if there's ways we can build a bigger genotyping panel for herbicide resistance in weeds.
And explain that to me being a layperson. What does it mean to build a bigger genotyping panel?
Yeah, so we build these what I call panels, and essentially what they are multiple genetic tests to identify markers within the genome of pigweed species. So the panel encompasses a genetic test for herbicide resistance in pigweeds to group 2, group 9, and group 14 herbicides, as well as in kochia, we're developing a test for the group 14, but also group 2 and group 9 herbicides. So by a panel, I mean just an all-encompassing genotyping test to capture all of those mutations that we're finding.
Now, earlier you mentioned new tools, and my understanding is that the technology for doing this has really sped up the process and made it a lot cheaper than it used to be. Can you maybe just talk about the evolution in the tools for genotyping that you've seen in your career?
Yeah, so we are set up as a high throughput testing facility. So for my own personal projects, so if I think back to my PhD work, we had to manually extract DNA from individual plants or in individual animals. Now we have robotics that do that for us. So the work involved is simpler for a person to do, especially with robotics. We can not only do tens of samples per day, but we can extract from hundreds of samples per day. We can test for multiple genetic markers throughout the day. So we're talking hundreds and almost thousands of data points that can be processed and reported out with the technology that we have in the lab.
That's amazing. And earlier you mentioned kind of new tools for pulse producers specifically. So when you say that, do you mean kind of the panels that you were talking about, or the other tools that might be specific to pulse crops?
Yeah, so for pulse crops, we've been working on developing a panel for root rot pathogens. And so right now we have one test that can look for three different pathogens, so Aphanomyces, and then two Fusarium species, Oxyparum and Avanaceum. And so we can use this test to search for these pathogens in the environment, so in the soil. We can also confirm what pathogen might be causing root rot by looking at root samples as well. And so we're building more. We're going to have six new targets: Fusarium, Phytophthora, for root rot pathogens for pulse crops.
And, you know, in order for a farmer to get that information, they just need to send you a soil sample. And is that soil sample any different than the ones that they might, you know, use for fertility or something?
That's our hope, is that we can use the same soil that they're already going out and collecting for fertility testing. We actually right now have a new national initiative. It's called the National Predictive Modeling Tool Initiative. And we just started a pilot project with Pulses. We're working with pathologists and agronomists in North Dakota and Montana. And the idea behind that is to use these DNA-based tests that we have at NAGC and have pathologists and agronomists collect soil samples for us to test for these various root rot pathogens and apply the results so we can quantify these pathogens in the soil as well as root samples and try to figure out if we can predict when disease may occur within the field. So this is collecting soil before planting as well as within season and after a pulse crop. So we can try to figure out these values of various pathogens within the soil.
Yeah. So I guess the idea is to come up with some sort of formula, for lack of a better term, of like the amount of presence currently versus like what that might look like during a growing season. As an example, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So some of the project will involve sampling suspected disease areas and healthy areas and kind of compare the results that we get from our pathogen tests.
That's really cool. At what stage is that project at right now? You know, how close are we to actually a farmer hearing this and being able to say, where do I send them my soil?
Yeah, so NAGC, we can accept soil for this test already. So the great thing about NAGC is that once these tests are validated in our laboratory, we provide them as a testing service to all growers. The problem right now is we can provide this test to farmers, but we don't know what these values mean. So we can tell them that they have Fusarium oxyparum in their soil, but we just don't know what those quantities mean in terms of disease potential. And so that's where this project with the National Predictive Modeling Tool comes into play, is that that will allow us to put some sort of value or actionable cause to the results that we provide. Because right now, we just don't know what those values mean.
And I won't name them, but I know that there's some private companies out there kind of trying to do this. And I don't know if it's for these same diseases or not. I imagine they are, you know, they're offering this as a paid service. Do they just have kind of proprietary, you know, processes for trying to project this out forward? Or should we be a little bit cautious from using a service like that when the scientists don't really know the connection between presence and predictability?
Yeah. So there are several companies that provide pathogen results. There's different genetic tests that can do that. There's next-gen sequencing where they just get millions and millions of reads of various microorganisms in soil. The trouble with that is that you can provide these ratios of organisms, you know, whether it's fungal or bacteria, and we just don't have a good handle on what that means. So our kind of goals at NAGC is more targeted. So, you know, we rely heavily on our stakeholders, you know, and speaking with farmers about what are some of the issues they're having. For example, Phantomyces seems to be a big one to test for. And so our genetic tests are more targeted. We're looking at one particular pathogen. And that's helpful in the sense that it's much easier to focus on single pathogens than it is looking at the whole community. Because right now we have a better idea of particular pathogens and the impact that they have in the field. Whereas when we get millions and millions of reads from this next-gen sequencing, we're just not sure what all of that data means.
Yeah. And for the targeted approach you're taking, what does it require for you to kind of get to that predictive place, you know, to get to the level where we are comfortable making some predictions? Is that just like years and years of like testing and then monitoring environmental conditions and then getting reports back on, you know, the data of the disease presence over many years. Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of time and a lot of data points to have the confidence to provide a value to a particular pathogen and what could be some management strategies for it. Sometimes it's easier. So for Aphantomyces, it seems like a zero tolerance type of pathogen to where if it's present, usually you want to avoid growing pulses in that field until there's an absence of it. But for others, for example, Fusarium oxyparum, we tend to find that everywhere. And so the limitation to a lot of genetic tests is that we can detect a particular organism like Fusarium oxyparum, but there's pathogenic and non-pathogenic isolates, and our tests pick up all of them. So we can't really tell you specifically whether it's the pathogenic isolate or non-pathogenic isolate. So with a lot of these molecular tests, you have to be careful with interpretation because, like we discussed, it takes a lot of years, a lot of data to compare pathogen values in a field to, you know, yield or quality results that happen after that test occurs.
And is that a service that the National Ag Genotyping Center offers to like contextualize the data to try to help understand, or is that really something that's done through your, you know, local crop consultant, agronomist, et cetera?
Yeah. So our specialty is generating the pathogen data. We rely heavily on the agronomists, the pathologists that kind of know the pathogens, know the biology, know certain management tools to use to help reduce their impacts. We really stick to just generating the data, developing these tests, because that's our expertise.
Makes sense. Now, for the more, for lack of a better term, straightforward analysis of like Aphantomyces, I need to know, is it there or is it not there? Does that exist today? Is that something that I could send in a sample to you today and you all could give me that information?
Yep. So for Aphantomyces, we can accept soil samples or root samples, and we can detect Aphantomyces, whether it's present or absence, as well as provide a quantity. These quantities, because we don't know exactly what they mean, it is a value that, you know, a grower could go back out in the fall, say they first sampled in the spring, they can go back out in the fall and test it again to see how the values differ from that same location in their field. So they can at least locally track the pathogen within the environment.
Interesting. And I mean, I imagine these pathogens, they're going to persist in the environment for, I mean, it's going to depend on the pathogen, I guess, but in some cases for many years, is my understanding. Is that right?
Yeah. So a lot of these pathogens, especially Aphantomyces that has resting spores, can be an issue. And so that's where us trying to figure out where the best place to collect soil from. So that's part of one of the projects we're working on, is figuring out where the soil should be collected from in the field and how many samples should be taken. That's a good representation of the field and the pathogens that exist in them. These are questions that a lot of people are trying to figure out, and we're trying to figure out locally in North Dakota and Montana.
Makes sense. Well, what about back on the weeds? Similar questions, just on the weed science DNA. What does that look like today for a farmer or an agronomist to be able to utilize this? What would be a scenario where it's most likely to add value to a farmer?
Yeah, so right now we have a 2-year project going on, only in the state of North Dakota, though, where growers, agronomists, and weed officers throughout the state can go out and collect pigweeds as well as kochia. We have a collection kit at all NDSU Extension offices throughout the state. And essentially, the collection kit involves coin envelopes. And so all we're asking is for folks to go out, if they have a population of pigweeds or kochia that either resisted a herbicide application or has just always persisted, they go out, they collect one or two leaves, they put them in these coin envelopes, and they just mail it back to us. It's a prepaid envelope. And then for free, we will send back a confidential report telling what herbicide-resistant markers we found in those species. And so part of the reason for this survey is that we need to get a better handle on where these herbicide-resistant hotspots are in our state. And from previous work, we're kind of finding out that it's widespread but patchy. So there's a lot of populations that are herbicide resistant, especially water hemp. We're finding stacked resistance in the greenhouse as well as with our genetic test, where some of these water hemp populations have resistance to group 2, group 9, and group 14 herbicides. And we're seeing these mutations within their genome as well. And so this helps just spread awareness to the growers within the region. We produce statewide maps showing where, at least at the county level, where we found herbicide-resistant pigweed and kochia populations. So outreach also benefits from these data. So they're able to figure out where these hotspots are. NDCU Extension scientists can go down, have conversations with growers and agronomists explaining that, you know, we're finding a lot of herbicide-resistant weeds within their area and to keep an eye out for them.
And defining a lot in this situation, is it just like a growth year over year? Is that how you determine if we're finding a lot, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so the hope is to extend the survey distribution. So we want to essentially get weeds from every county and interstate to understand the distribution of these herbicide-resistant pigweed populations.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And what are you seeing? I imagine I know the answer, but I'm going to let you say it, not me, as far as the spread of resistance in these weeds.
Yeah, the spread of herbicide resistance, or just finding herbicide-resistant populations, is widespread. It seems like every time we get a new pigweed in and we test it for these herbicide-resistant markers linked to resistance, we're finding them. So in every corner of our state, we're seeing it. And the major concern right now is kochia with the new group 14 resistance that was found. We do have some samples from various counties that we just tested this last week, and we're finding this genetic marker that is strongly associated with group 14 resistance. And so I think this is going to be a very important test, especially that it's such a new mutation or a new resistance that has been found in kochia. And like I said, this test will be available to everyone. It's just free right now for North Dakota growers.
Interesting. Well, we've already talked about this a little bit, but I'll just ask more directly, like, you know, in the future, where do you think these tools might lead to capabilities that we don't have today that you think might be possible in the future that might be relevant to an audience of pulse crop growers?
Yeah, I think the hope is that the genetic testing that we do can be performed out in the field. And there has been a start of technology, sequencing, as well as this qPCR testing that we use that can be performed in a truck or on the back tailgate of a truck. But that's the hope, is that you can have an agronomist go out there and extract the DNA and do the genetic testing on site. Currently, right now, it's just there's too much expertise that's needed, mostly with contamination issues, that we just haven't gotten there quite yet. But yeah, the goal is to have these genetic tests available on site.
Wow, very cool. Well, Zach, I really appreciate this. Anything else that we should make sure we talk about, you know, on a short podcast episode about this for pulse crop industry?
So the National Agricultural Genotyping Center, we really rely on our stakeholders and others to guide our testing menu. So we're always looking for ideas. You know, some of the best ideas come from our conversations with pulse crop growers or farmers. And so if there's a need for a diagnostic test, we really want people to reach out to us and have these conversations, because a lot of these conversations end up allowing us to develop these tests, make them available to other growers that might have equal interest in knowing about the pathogens that are in their soil, or mutations or herbicide resistance in their weed populations.
Excellent. And I know you talked about collaborating with weed scientists and probably plant pathologists as well. If there's researchers that are listening and interested in collaboration or support, you know, from your organization, is that something that you're kind of open to partnerships and sort of collaborations like that?
Yes, definitely. Our laboratory is open to collaborations both in the public and private sector. So we work with 21 different land-grant universities on the National Predictive Modeling Tool Initiative. We see ourselves as a data generator for a lot of academic labs. So there are labs out there that, or should I say, research groups that are out there doing the agronomy side of research, but they want to have genetic information, pathogen detection information, but they just don't have the molecular lab. And that's where we come in. We help support. We're able to receive samples and test them for various pathogens, or if it's weeds, test them for these herbicide resistant markers and just generate that data for academic research groups that do not have those capabilities.
Very cool, Zach. Thank you very much for doing this. Any message, if you could talk to an audience, a group in a room full of pulse crop growers, what would be your message to them?
My message to them would be ask questions. We are here to listen to the issues that are happening. It's easy for me as a lab rat to think of these grandiose ideas for a research project, but it's important that it is a practical project, how we can help pulse crop growers with the issues that they're having. We can get stuck in the clouds, and we really need stakeholders and growers and farmers to pull us back and get us back into the practical realm.
Well, what a great point to end on there about the importance of engagement between everyone in the industry, from farmers to researchers and beyond. Before we close, I want to make sure that I reiterate here that this testing is available nationally. So although Zach is based in North Dakota, they can accept samples from anywhere nationwide. The fees that they charge for their services are available on their website, which I will be sure to link to in the show notes. We have a lot more great content coming your way this season. Make sure you're a subscriber to the Growing Pulse Crops podcast so you don't miss our upcoming episodes, like the next one about field pea variety development with Dr. Tom Workentine.
So a combination of conventional breeding and marker-assisted breeding and screening material with the actual pathogens, either indoors or outdoors, all of those approaches we're using and, you know, developing some lines that have improved resistance. So we had a few of them in the so-called variety registration tests this year. They're looking like they have some improvement in disease resistance, I should say, but this first batch may not be high yielding enough to be exciting for farmers. So farmers may have to wait for the second batch.
Again, make sure you're following and subscribing to this show so you don't miss that upcoming episode. The Growing Pulse Crops podcast series is produced by Dr. Audrey Kalau and myself in collaboration with the Pulse Crops Working Group. The show is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors, the Northern Pulse Growers Association, the North Central IPM Center, USDA NIFA, and the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council. We're releasing these episodes 2 times per month throughout the season. We want to make sure the information stays relevant to you. So if you're finding it useful, we'd love it if you'd leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or both. And feel free to tweet us anytime by using the hashtag GrowingPulseCrops. We'll be back with another great episode in a couple weeks.